Hey, it's Liz Kelly, and welcome to the Ringer Podcast Network. As the year comes to a close, our staff is writing about our favorite sports moments of 2019. Jason Concepcion explains the year in 10 pieces of pop culture, and we break down the last 10 years of the Marvel Universe. Also, ahead of the new Star Wars movie coming out next week, the staff's discussing Baby Yoda, Rise of Skywalker romances, and what the Resistance will do if they win. You can check this all out on theringer.com.
What's going on, jabronis? It's Pitch Mr. Perfect, Skylar Astin.
Hey, this is Bruce Pritchard.
Bros Battle Season 1 champion, Mike Lund.
The King of Sad Stop.
The Silver Lake Heartthrob.
It's Trey Kirby.
It's Nick Mundy.
This is your real WWE superstar, the legit boss, Sasha Banks.
Hey, this is WWE superstar, Braun Strowman.
My name's Kevin Owens.
I have Shinsuke Nakamura.
Zach Linder.
Dan Black, a.k.a. the Goofaraja.
I'm AJ Styles, the phenomenal one, if you will, and you're listening.
You're listening to the Masked Man Show.
Welcome to the Masked Man Show. Your host, David Shoemaker, just coming off the TLC pay-per-view and running headlong into the biggest pay-per-view of all, Christmas. I'm sitting here in the New York studio with none other than my heel producer, Jim, who decided to fly out just to make this program. How you doing, Jim?
I'm good. You make me sound pathetic to do this, but yeah, I'm here.
We are, we're going to have a little mask mailbag.
Hell yeah.
We are going to jump and dispense with all formality and jump right into the mailbag. Does that sound good?
Perfect.
Ask me a question, Jim.
Danny Gonzalez wants to know that if everyone knew Kyrie was injured before the botched spear and improvised powerbomb through the table by Charlotte.
All right, here we go.
Why couldn't Charlotte see that something was wrong?
I'm glad we're starting off with the easy stuff. Okay, so... for those of you not watching, you watch Chelsea, Jim, right?
Yeah,
sure. Shaking his head no. So what happened was that in the main event, Charlotte Flair and Becky Lynch teamed up against the Kabuki Warriors. And at some point in the match, Kairi Sane clearly gets concussed or otherwise awkwardly debilitated. And well, there's a lot of odd moments in the match. I think the first time that everybody was like acutely aware that something was off was when she jumped off the apron onto Lynch and Flair, who were lying on tables outside the ring. But it was like a weird jump that Charlotte dodged. She hit Becky, but it was like a botched fall of 2 feet. And it would have made a lot more sense for her to be doing her giant elbow off the top rope through the table to match Becky Lynch doing the leg drop off that. Anyway, and they had to kind of cover up the landing with a camera cut. That whole thing was weird. But then soon thereafter, she and Charlotte are going at it outside the ring. Charlotte spears her. She can't even sell the spear. Like, she basically just sits down when Charlotte spears her. Charlotte then appears to get mad, slap her in the face. Maybe this is in character. Who knows? But then immediately goes for a powerbomb through a table that I'm sure was very well could have been scheduled, but was certainly rushed into at that moment. Now, some people speculate that she was pissed off and just trying to give her a little receipt for not selling the spear well enough. Who knows? But what happened? But it's clear you can tell of all of the crazy reading of signs and signals and facial expressions in this match that people have been doing. There are two things that are very, very clear. One is, to me anyway, one is that table spot was, Charlotte certainly rushed into it. You can tell because she basically picks her up before she starts wiping shit off the table. You know, this was not like, when this stuff happens, we've all seen it, the things get moved away from the table like five moves ahead, right? You know, or they set up the spot, they come back to it. And then the other thing that's clear is when she picks up for the powerbomb, not only is Kairi Sane like not helping, not doing like the jump thing,
sit up.
Charlotte Flair muscles her up into the powerbomb. Kairi Sane realizes, you can see her realize halfway up what's about to happen. She freaks out, starts slapping Charlotte on the arm, which can only mean stop doing this. And then Charlotte power bombs her through a table. Now, it's clear that before this, it seems clear that Becky Lynch was aware that there was a problem before this happened. Becky Lynch and Asuka seemed to be aware and were sort of shielding her. They weren't shielding her here. It's unclear why Charlotte was unaware, why she wouldn't have been told, or why she wouldn't have at least figured it out on her own at some point during that exchange, if nothing else. And it's especially weird that the two referees who were standing right there didn't intervene in some way. Like, what are you there for if not to notice that one of the people is clearly concussed?
Right.
It's a very long way of saying this, but I'm glad we opened the show with it because it's the most significant thing, I think, by a long shot that's happened this week. I don't know what to say. I honestly don't know what to say. I never call for anybody's firing in basically any walk of life. There's a lot of things that you can, not in any walk of life, there's certainly fireable offenses. Being shitty at your job one day is not necessarily a firing offense. Having a whatever. Very rarely would I say fire somebody. But I know the show must go on. I know it's all showbiz. I know whatever turn you want to have. And listen, it could be that there are a million very reasonable excuses or reasons why it ended up looking the way it did. But if that was any other walk of life, those refs would be suspended. Charlotte would be issuing a public apology. You know, there would be like visible repercussions. And for all WWE has done, and admirably done, in the world of CTE and concussions, and for as seriously as they take this stuff now, hell, I mean, they have wrestlers who've, Daniel Bryan, his career almost ended because of this kind of thing. Because the doctor didn't want to let him back in. For all the good stuff that they've done and all the precautions that they take, to not treat this with more immediate gravity in real time, at least like on the website on something, seems like a real lapse. Even if nothing happened, even if she was knocked silly and not concussed, it could have been nothing. It could have been that she like had a rib bruise and thought that she was seriously injured or something. You know, there could have been a lot of explanations for this that are not crazy. WWE owes the world an answer immediately after that shit happens. And the fact that most people are just sort of cool because Charlotte and Becky tweeted like you're a real champion or whatever to Kairi Sane, and Kairi Sane tweeted a thumbs up. Just shows how bought into the whole Carney shit we are. Like, it doesn't matter that she... This is it. In the moment, I couldn't even rewatch it after I realized what had happened and sort of started watching. After I watched it, rewatched it once, I could not watch it again. But to me, it almost doesn't matter if she was injured or not. Like, I think that injury would have made a lot more poignant. But the fact that it was so clear that she seemed to be injured makes it every bit as significant as if she was injured in terms of getting a response from WWE, in terms of actually seeing some, just seeing, like, having anything happen. I don't know. Maybe I'm overreacting, but
if they had stopped the match, you would have just been totally fine with it as her not, like, she couldn't continue to compete.
Well, this is the beauty of it. This is a tag match. She could just lie on the outside of that. Basically, it's what they happened.
They basically wrote
her out of the match immediately after that point, and they finished it with just Asuka, Lynch, and Flair. They could have done that at any point. You know, that would have been fine.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could have flipped the decision, or, you know, whatever. I mean, there are so many layers of precaution in this match that just didn't work. And I think that's kind of what that's like what shocks me the most is that how many times do we hear wrestlers say that that the most important thing is that you have your opponent's life in your hands. You would never, you know, flip the script. You would never do there. You know, the most important thing is the trust that somebody has in you. Well, all right, that's the first line of defense. Clearly that one didn't work. There's referees out there whose job is to protect people. That didn't work. There are untold numbers of people watching on monitors backstage that can see everything we can see, that then have a direct earphone link to the referees. That didn't stop anything. Clearly Becky Lynch and Asuka did realize something was going on, but that wasn't enough to prevent anything from happening. It was a very bizarre situation. And I will say people went really hard at Charlotte afterwards, but like, and maybe too far. Because for better or worse, you know, wrestling isn't a real sport, but like there is an element of being like caught up in the moment and you know, you're really competing, you're really, you know,
right,
whatever. Sorry. And there's also the if you want to relate it to sports, there's also the thing where like if you rewatch a clip over and over again in slow motion, it's going to look a lot more deliberate and damning than it did, you know, than it would in real time. And you know, it's easy to blame, but it does seem to me that as raw a deal as she got, if that had been, I don't know, like if Braun Strowman had done that to Ali, I think a lot of people would just insist that Braun Strowman be fired. Hmm. And he very well may be fired. Brock Lesnar or someone, you know, he's a champion, so it's a little bit harder to imagine. But like, if it was a big, giant dude who the fans weren't necessarily behind, I think it would have been an even more extreme reaction. So anyway, it was a very weird, messy situation.
On the other side of that, though, is it possible that Charlotte was caught up? Charlotte's had concussions before herself, and I don't know, was caught up. I don't know how, you know, concussions and CTE work.
But, no, I mean,
know,
I,
you don't
yeah.
know how your brain chemistry kind of, who knows? I mean, it's there's a weird,
listen,
dangerous sport.
I think that if I were a professional wrestler, if I were a women's wrestler in WWE, I would have some real reservations about working with Charlotte. I mean, but I think that if that's kind of where your head is, and I don't mean to make like a CTE joke, if that's where your head is, then like you probably can find reservations about working with everybody.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Just about everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
So in this moment, I can understand why someone was just like, yeah, maybe not. It is notable that they moved right to Becky Lynch versus Asuka for the title and just sort of like sidestepped the rest of it. But setting that aside, I don't know that, blaming Charlotte, I mean, unless the people backstage know something about Charlotte, you know, whatever, if this is like a reputation that she has, if this is
but
something.
Has she ever done something like that before?
No, not really, no, no.
When was the last time you remember something like this happening?
Well, the thing that everybody compares it to is, or it was the thing that came up recently in the Randy Orton, Kofi Kingston feud when way back in the day, 10 years ago, Kofi kind of botched a spot and Randy Orton just basically broke character during the match and just yelled stupid at him over and over again. But that's again, he yelled at him.
Yeah.
Orton did that a few times. There were a couple of times, and I think Mr. Kennedy, there was one with Orton.
So Nate
Orton
HBK
would get pissed
did
off
to Vader too.
Well, there's a lot of times where people like gave each other potato, you know, just like kind of hit. I mean, Brock Lesnar and legit
Braun, when
hit
he punched Braun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
That was in
Royal
response
Rumble,
to Braun. And I think there's a lot of ways that we as wrestling fans feel like we know more than maybe we do. Sort of like when sometimes if you use wrestling lingo around an old school wrestler, they'll get offended. You know, it's just like, no,
that's
you know,
ours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that
appropriation.
There's a lot of that appropriation of just general knowledge that people that wrestling fans have. They know how they know a signal in the ring. They know whatever.
Right.
There is the sort of old thing where it's like you've seen so many times and heard so many stories of people smacking, you know, hurting somebody deliberately, if not like literally trying to injure them, giving them a little hard move because they feel like the other person wasn't selling their move. You know, it's the disrespect of making my move look weak.
Right.
And I think people immediately read that into the Charlotte Kairi Sane interaction with the powerbomb. But if you want to, but even if you discount that, there has to be some means of saying, of like knowing
this
that your opponent.
Injured.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you ever see when Sid and like Dan Spivey like went insane on those guys? Like that one guy wasn't selling anything. Some like job.
Oh, yeah.
WCW. And they just like beat the crap
out
of them.
Absolutely nuts. There actually wasn't. Yeah,
but that guy wasn't like blatantly totally out of it and injured. He was just wasn't selling anything to start off. So they just went off on him. But
there,
when
there,
a person
was the famous,
incapacitated, it's real scary.
Years ago, I wrote for Grantland. Mm-hmm. God, I'm so old. This is 2013. I wrote
Jesus Christ.
A piece for Grantland about Lex Luger and Bruiser Brody in an early match in Florida, I think. We can tweet that out. But where I was wrestling, I was doing a series about like in-ring shoots, and you can tell that like Brody just was not, did not feel like he was getting the respect he deserved from Luger in terms of selling his moves, and just went nuts on him. Just started hitting him for real and stuff.
Oh, in the cage?
Yeah.
That's a bad spot to be caught in a shoot spot.
Yeah. I mean, yes, for sure.
Weren't you going to do a series like that for Grantland? Well, maybe
there
you don't.
A series.
We could always
did,
do it.
I did
that
like six
a whole
of them.
Series. Yeah. It was only written, though. I thought it was going to be like audio and interviews. No. Maybe we bring that back.
Maybe so.
What was it called?
Wrestling's Greatest Shoots, Volume 1.
Creative. Yeah. No wonder it failed.
Anyway, really weird moment. And I think the weirdest thing to me is that it's just sort of disappeared, because I think it's incumbent on everybody to really treat this seriously. If you're not going to come out and explain what happened and explain why it doesn't matter, or if, why it does matter, or even why it doesn't matter, like that nothing really that significant happened, Kairi Sane's already proved to get, or, you know, okay to go back in the ring, blah, blah, blah. If all that stuff is true and you don't tell us, then quit fucking stopping matches because of head injuries.
Right.
Like, you have to treat it seriously now after the match as seriously as you do in the ring.
It's like with UFC, when you can't defend yourself,
yeah,
to stop the match. And this is like, you're not defending yourself, obviously, because it's kind of a work.
Listen, if
but
you're,
if the person is injured and is already not supposed to be defending himself,
yeah,
it's just
this has
like,
happened several
on.
Times in UFC. If the referee comes in late or something like that, but if like in a cage match, if you knock your opponent out, he goes to the ground, and you know,
hammer fist,
Big John McCarthy or whoever is there, like slips on a banana peel on the other side of the ring and can't get over to break you up. Mm-hmm. By like the second or third hammer fist on the ground, you are committing a crime. And I think most right. people would agree with that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, not literally a crime. You're not going to go to jail. We all know, we all understand the jurisdiction, but like you, it is the expectation is that you are self-aware, that you are aware of your surroundings enough to know that your opponent is immobilized, regardless of whether or not the referee jumps in between.
Right.
And I think that, you know, you got to say that applies here too.
Mm. Okay.
Anyway. Do we have any happier questions?
I was going to say, thank you, Danny Gonzalez, for that one. Damn. All right. Next question. Let's get happier from Drip Bayless, who we've had a question on from here before, I
Hell
believe.
Yeah.
How many Hall of Fame rings is Triple H going to end up with?
I was just watching that. This is not the answer to the question. I was just watching the Goldberg Broken Skull Sessions thing on WWE Network.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you were watching something on my account recently. I turned it on. It was like before the thing I had just watched, there was a continue watching of something totally crazy and I forgot what it was.
Let me see.
Maybe I'm just imagining that. Maybe someone else in my house is watching wrestling and I'm not aware.
I feel like your login never works for me anymore.
Yeah, that's what you always say. But anyway, there's a very, very brief clip of a back.
Survivor Series 89, Jake the Snake Roberts.
That's a good one. There's a very brief clip of Goldberg and Triple H embracing backstage after Goldberg won the title. And Triple H is back there in his briefs as well. Like he's about to go on, but he doesn't have his shoulder pads. I don't think he has his knee pad. He's not fully geared up. He's just sitting backstage in black in his tights.
This is when? Like a.
It's after he beat, it must have been right after he beat Brock for the title at the Royal Rumble.
It was like that weird quick match.
Yeah. And just seeing, first of all, just anytime you see two like grown, incredibly muscular men, but in they're just hugging, it's always just like a different thing than you're expecting in the pro wrestling world. But Triple H and Goldberg are both just so like incredibly muscled. They're both 50 years old. Which is wild when you see two. It's one thing when like you see Triple H year after year and you're like, how is he in better shape? But two men side by side, when it's like, man, when we were kids, like 50-year-olds were old.
Oh yeah.
Like the cast of Cocoon were in their 50s. You know, I mean, like it's like old men are 50 in when we were kids.
Them hugging is like the Predator handshake meme. But full body.
Oh yeah.
It's like,
but anyway, so they so that was Triple. I just watching Triple H back there. I'm just like, jeez. Anyway, how many is he going to retire with?
Yeah.
Triple H, DX, Legacy. I mean, wait, is that what
Evolution?
It's Evolution.
Is he NWO?
He's
Corporation. NXT GM.
He'll probably get an office one. I don't think you can induct NXT into the Hall of Fame, but I think that there's, I definitely think there's a case.
What about Hunter Hearst Helmsley, like the snob?
I don't think you can. I think that's under the Triple H blanket,
terrorizing
or umbrella. Terrorizing be so good. They should do backstage people though.
I think they do, don't they?
I know. I mean, they like Pat Patterson's in, and that's. But I think it was more about his career. But like, it should be. Just like if you're in like a regular Hall of Fame, you get in separately as a player and a coach, right?
I think so.
Yeah, they should have. I mean, that wouldn't that be great if you were just like every year they announce every year they induct one producer, promoter, whatever.
Is Mark Yeaton in, the guy who throws Stone Cold the beers? He was like the ring guy. He should.
Is it
be.
One guy the whole time?
Yeah, and he's been with the WWF for like 30 years. I was listening to one of Conrad's pods the other day, and he's like, is that Mark Eaton? And they're like, yeah. And this was like Survivor Series 89, probably why I was watching that thing.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Mark Yeaton, Y-E-A-T-O-N.
Mark Y-E-A-T-O-N?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Timekeeper. He's got to be in the Hall of Fame just for throwing those beers. They're so good.
Oh, I know that guy.
Get him in the Hall.
Yeah, he should definitely be in the Hall of Fame. Yeah, if you've sat ringside, you know who that is.
So Triple H, 20 rings, over under.
Definitely under. But that would be cool. They should definitely induct one promoter or producer. I guess they do promoters. They do like, you know, famous wrestling figures who own territories have made it in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Vince Sr.'s in.
Well.
Yeah.
Is Vince in?
But it would be cool for like, I don't think he's. It would be cool for, like, just the legacy of the business to be like, who? I mean, those old school guys who helped create backstage.
If they were to build a hall, an actual Hall of Fame, where do you think it should be? Or do you think it should just be wherever WrestleMania is?
Well, I mean, it's going to be in Orlando.
It is? It's not going to be in Stanford?
It should be in Stanford.
What about they parts just, unknown?
They just insisted that it already it exists.
Yeah, that's where it is now.
That would be fantastic. And parts unknown. Or you know what they should do is do the
buy
little,
an island and name it parts
well,
unknown.
Well, I was going to say, just get, because I think that the Orlando thing is basically just that, like, well, first of all, it's near Disneyland. Tourist, yeah. It's like touristy stuff. There are people going there. But also, there's a little bit of like Orlando wants that. Yeah. Like, Orlando would, like, it will give them all the tax breaks and whatever else to make mm-hmm. it happen. So as long as you're negotiating, as long as the city's giving shit away, just be like, this quarter mile squared is for now and ever to be known as Parts Unknown Florida.
I like it.
You know? And Orlando yeah. can take our tax
money. Because Disney already has like a weird town name over there.
That's what
Celebration.
I was saying. Yeah. Celebration City.
Yeah. And then Epcot. We got Parts Unknown. It's like in the shadows.
That'd be fantastic.
Yeah. Like I mean, Lion King. Anything.
I'm biased. Maybe as a Northeasterner, maybe as an adult. I don't know what it is. But like, I prefer... the old-fashioned Hall of Fame that is in a city that doesn't, like the Baseball Hall of Fame, NFL, whatever, like they like doesn't necessarily have a whole lot else going on.
Right. So that would be Stanford then.
Yeah. I mean,
and
Stanford's
close
got,
to New York City.
Stanford's got a lot going on, but there's nothing, but like the idea that you're driving down the highway and you just see that green sign where it's like WWE Hall of Fame and you're just like, ooh.
It's cool.
Let's just do it right now.
I remember being young and driving by Stanford and you could see the WWF building.
I know they're like, moving oh, though. Or I don't know if they're abandoning that building totally, if they're still doing production there, they're moving like downtown to like Main Street Stanford.
Mm.
So
you know what else is in Stanford that I went to? Jerry Springer show.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
You can also go to Maury and Steve Wilkos.
They're all in Stanford?
Yeah. Or at least they were like a few years
who
ago.
Who is the audience for these?
Me. And some other people. I loved it.
I mean, Stanford's not like a tiny town, but it's not like New York or LA where there's just like always 1,000 people willing to sit in an audience.
Yeah, but if you think about it, going to Jerry Springer is like going to a WWF show.
No, no doubt about that at all. But like, what would be, but there's no, like, how many people are there in Stanford who are just like, sure, like maybe it's.
And it's 1 in the afternoon. It's like, maybe you guys don't have work.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe because it's like a big industry in Stanford, maybe going to Jerry Springer is like serving jury duty. It's like if you go to your boss with Springer tickets, they're like, all right, I have to let you go.
Yeah. It's awesome.
That would be great.
Yeah. Let's go. All while right. I'm here, we
I'm
should
in.
Go.
right, cool. So Triple H, 20 rings. All the rings at the end. He's going to...
He definitely deserves all of them.
All right, we got a question from Christian A. Brown. His handle is Unknown Whisper. Best wrestler of the decade.
Oh, criminy.
is that a word?
Yeah. Who is the best wrestler of the decade?
AJ?
When did he debut in... I mean, not that this is exclusive.
When did he debut in WWE? He was in New Japan. He was in WWE.
But he's been around for more than a decade. I know that doesn't rule him out. I'm just saying, like, did he have a better...
I'm just thinking, who won the biggest titles over the most...
So basically, AJ Styles, his decade started with Fortune, which was a pretty cool TNA angle. He worked Ring of Honor and then New Japan and then WWE starting in 16. I mean, that's a really compelling case.
What about Finn?
I just don't think you can put it. I love him.
AJ didn't win anything in NXT. Didn't Finn carry NXT too? I just kind of like the idea of
I think if NXT were on, I agree with that. I think Finn's main roster run left so much to be desired, and left so much on the table. Mm-hmm. And NXT, as cool as it was, NXT wasn't then anything remotely resembling what it is now. Mm-hmm. The decade.
Tyson Fury.
Yeah.
Undefeated.
Cain Velasquez.
Rey Mysterio.
Brock Lesnar probably was a bigger wrestler over the course. I mean, sold more tickets over the decade, right?
Than AJ.
Well, I guess AJ. You can say AJ sold tickets for every Raw that he was on or whatever. But
what about Jericho?
Yeah. Damn, this is hard.
I mean,
it's just hard. It's hard to pick somebody who's like past their prime. But
what was Cody doing?
I mean, obviously Jericho doesn't have a prime. So Lesnar came back in 2012. So you could definitely make a case for him, even though he works such a limited schedule.
Yeah. I don't like it.
But Jericho, I mean, you'd be making the case based on a limited schedule too, right?
Yeah, but during that off time, he's also headlining Fozzy Fest or whatever the hell it's called. He's on the cruise.
He does not get the credit for that. Daniel Bryan, despite his time off.
What about Cody? Dashing Cody Rhodes?
I was just looking at him. I mean, we're going to look back on him being incredibly significant, but mostly because of leaving WWE and then subsequently of, you know, founding AEW. But
which is huge, though.
It's huge. I just don't know how
as a wrestler.
I just don't know how you give him the decade. I mean, John Cena, probably you could easily make a case, right?
Charlotte Flair. John Cena hasn't done anything in like 3 years, though, has he?
Charlotte, I mean.
No, Charlotte, not after what happened the other day.
Rollins. I mean, you could put Nakamura up there, but that's putting a lot of weight on New Japan.
Right.
I mean, CM Punk has had, 4 years at the beginning of the decade that were more important than just about what anybody else has done the rest of the decade.
Yeah, but
I think Charlotte, you actually got to put on the list. Roman Reigns, just because of his significant, I mean, his placement. Yeah, I mean, I think that at the end of the day,
Sammy Guevara graduated middle school.
man, that's really hard. I think it's hard. I think I would go with Charlotte on the women's side, but I have a hard time putting her in the top five, certainly in the top three. I think it's gotta be AJ or Cena or no, I think Daniel Bryan, I think his return almost outweighs his absence, and you can even make a case that his absence will have more significance, more of a bearing on the industry going forward than a lot of people's presence did. I don't know. That is this. It's really tough.
So we're gonna go with Triple H.
Yeah, and so at the end of the day, the end of the day, I'm going with Hulk Hogan.
The guy who's gonna win always.
The Undertaker.
And that'd be good. Now this question shouldn't be hard at all after that one. Who will we look back at the end of 2029 as best of the decade?
Triple H.
Done.
How many matches do you think Triple H and The Undertaker will work to combined in the next decade?
How many Saudi Arabia shows are left on the contract? Can we get that guy on the pod? The guy who books those shows?
What guy?
The Saudi Arabia guy. Who's in charge of it. The guy who's like, yeah, he's got wrestling figures like in his room. And he's like, all right, I want Hogan and Shawn Michaels.
I don't think he's allowed on the podcast. I'm just going to make that decision right now. Who's going to be the best? I mean, age matters, as I was discussing about Triple H and Goldberg. Age matters a whole lot less than it used to.
Orange Cassidy's probably going to still be have a lot of energy. He's not going to be too burnt out by then.
I mean, Sammy Guevara, I mean, you have to look at like the Sammy Guevaras of the world because youth is going to matter.
Does he call himself Selfie Sammy Guevara? He should.
Why?
Doesn't he always have the selfie stick?
Oh, yeah.
Or Selfie Guevara. But I never hear anyone refer to him as that. I don't know. Danny Gonzalez, friend of the show, actually asked me to ask you also, do you think Smart Marks would be crapping all over the Orange Cassidy gimmick had WWE come up with it?
Oh, man.
It's a good question that you don't want to answer.
I mean, I don't think it's as simple as that. I don't think so. I don't think they'd be crapping on it at all. I mean, if they gave the gimmick to Roman Reigns and then pushed him to the main event, maybe. But no, I mean, like WWE fans wholeheartedly embraced Fandango, and they wholeheartedly embraced Adam Rose. I'm trying to think. What are some other?
Yeah, but those guys still actually like fought.
Santino. Like the wrestling, WWE fans have, you know, fans will accept that from WWE. I don't think it would have had the same credibility, like indie cred. Certainly it wouldn't have been, wouldn't have reacted in exactly the same way. But, yeah.
Okay.
I don't think it's that cut and dry.
This one. How about this?
Oh, you know what? I have an answer to the previous question.
Okay.
I don't know if this is my number one, but Rhea Ripley.
For 2029?
Yeah, for 2029.
It's not a bad one.
I think there's a lot more youth on the women's side. But yeah, she's sort of cream of the crop. There's so much good young talent. Toni Storm. Like every woman who makes it who wins matches on NXT. And then there's like just all of these. I mean, there's so many wrestlers on the main roster who haven't even gotten a look. I mean, a real look yet, you know? Sonya Deville, Liv Morgan, who they just started rebooting in some weird way on Monday night. I don't know. I think that there's a lot of there's a lot of potential women on that roster.
Next question.
Oh, Velveteen Dream. Talk about youth. There we go. That's your male side.
All right. I'm going Triple H.
Okay.
Next question from Carmelo's Mustache asks, can Aleister Black find his way to a WWE title shot in 2020?
Yeah, 100%.
Sure.
There are the distance between the upper mid card and the main event. The biggest thing standing in his way isn't his talent or the booking or anything else. It's or the way they're going to book him. I mean, it's the fact that Brock Lesnar is holding the title hostage again. And if that continues, then he'd do well to get a U.S. title shot. I mean, if it looks like Seth Rollins is now going to gun for Rey Mysterio, so Seth Rollins can be the Raw champion. I'm doing air quotes with my fingers by holding the U.S. championship, doing that gimmick again, while Brock Lesnar is skulking around somewhere else with the
hunting
the big belt. Yeah, but who knows if Aleister Black? I mean, if anybody on the Raw side is going to be able to claim it in that span of time, I would assume so though. But Aleister Black will be, Aleister Black could be in a big match at WrestleMania. I mean, Aleister Black is he's money, and I think everybody knows it, assuming his nose is okay after it getting smushed at TLC.
Do you think we could get the humanoids all to pitch in on a Kickstarter to get us a Fiend belt for the studio here?
I don't want a Fiend belt. Don't give me nightmares.
Come on. That's my favorite belt. All right.
It's really the worst belt.
I know. That's why I like it.
What if we get a Fiend belt but it was your face instead of like the Fiend mask
face?
I'd wear
it everywhere. I'd wear the Fiend belt out in public on a date, first date. All right, Star of Savage, good name, asks, who should win the men's Royal Rumble in 2020? And why is it Kofi Kingston? I hate when people ask questions and then do that. But who do you think should win it?
Who should win the men's Royal Rumble in 2020? Mm-hmm. Kofi would be a good story.
Would it? They'd ruin it. It would be good if they had Kofi win, and then he wins the title, and then Brock Lesnar kills him in like 5 seconds.
Who would be the best surprise? Luke Harper.
The Undertaker.
Oh my gosh, the best winner would be like Triple H or Roman Reigns. Just Roman Reigns.
This podcast is sponsored by Triple H, by the way. Just to let everyone know.
Triple H is the answer to every question.
He's sitting next to us.
My vote is
for Roman Reigns to just come out of nowhere, win it again.
It would be cool if they put every title on him at the exact same time, like one of those boxers who like has 8 titles on.
That'd be so great. There's a picture of Triple H like that. You've seen that, right?
No, man, that's amazing.
There's a meme of Triple H just holding it. You can just like Google Triple H title belts or whatever. There's like an incredible meme of him holding all the titles at once. It's fantastic.
Next question. How awkward will it be when the Jaguars play on Fox?
Oh, because of Tony Khan?
I guess so.
I don't think it'll be that awkward.
I don't think anyone like in the Fox booth will have any idea what the hell is going on. What is the best wrestling match of all time? Ask Brandon Ray.
The greatest wrestling match of all time.
It's gotta be Triple H.
Yeah, Triple H
in WWE 2K19.
Triple H versus Goldberg back in the day. The best wrestling match of all time. I mean,
everyone says.
What are we supposed to say?
Right?
I was gonna say Savage Steamboat. I mean, it's got to be like some Ric Flair match on the circuit that like only got recorded by one camera sitting in the back.
Yeah, there was something recently that I thought about that was really good.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many.
I know.
Crazy thing is that we're seeing them right now. I mean, unless you want to.
I know what you're saying, yeah.
Some of like the best wrestling matches, certainly the best wrestling matches that like WWE has ever produced from an from a physical standpoint.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Are happening like at NXT takeovers year in and year out.
Have you listened?
We never saw, you know, Andrade Gargano in my childhood. Never anything close. Like Steamboat Savage was great because it was very athletic and it told a story. Mm-hmm. That was about as best as we could do.
Right.
But like, and part of it's just the way it was booked too. It's not just that like guys are smaller and more athletic and there's my, you know, no one would have ever dreamed of a Canadian destroyer in 1986.
Right.
But it would be super fun if you could go back in time or like get a time machine and just see what like young, I mean, like who would have been the best, like a young Mr. Perfect and like Owen Hart could do, and if they were like if they just landed in NXT or AEW in 2019.
That's a good call. How tall was Mr. Perfect? He's got to be 6'3", 6'4".
Mr. Perfect would be a legit, like really, and he wasn't that tall. He's probably in real life probably 6 feet tall, but like
really,
he was not big enough to like look imposing next to Hogan.
He's listed at 6'3".
I said real life, not his kayfabe height.
Still real to me. God damn it. I want to say
I just found entertainment.ie, which is a very reputable site that I've never heard of.
.ie.
I was on comedy.com Iceland earlier. Website? Like, I don't know where these websites are coming from. All right, they have a top 10 greatest wrestling matches of all time. Number 10, The Rock versus Mankind. I quit. I mean, I guess this is a really weird list. Triple H versus Cactus Jack, Royal Rumble 2000. All right, this is like only, only Attitude Era.
Can we just say Adam Cole versus Gargano, NXT Brooklyn? Because number
Number five on this was Jake the Snake Roberts. Five is That Time the Snake Bit Randy Savage.
Yes.
I don't know if that was the greatest match of all time. The first ladder match, Razor Ramon versus Shawn Michaels, won. That wasn't the first ladder match, but the first time they had one. And then Rock Stone Cold, WrestleMania 17 was really good. I don't say X7.
please don't.
But yeah, I mean, there are a lot of options. I think that the truth of the matter is, you know, it was probably something that involved Ric Flair wrestling for an hour that, you know, we don't have the luxury of seeing, or, you know, it's just hidden on the network somewhere. But anyway.
Michael Fazio asks, if you could bring back one classic belt to use again, it's not a belt, it's a title, which one would you pick?
It's the Winged Eagle. I mean, that's the only one. Yeah,
that's the best one. The Hogan one, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
I mean, there's...
Cena spinner.
No. The 10 pounds of gold, I know, is maybe even better.
People love that more. I'm a Hogan belt guy.
Thing with the 10 pounds of gold is it was just sort of like, it's like the opulence, like the gaudiness of it. It was a shit ton of gold. It was a gigantic main plate. And now that's sort of been outdone. So it's lost a little bit of its luster, no pun intended. But I think actually I'm going to go with 10 pounds of gold.
No way. Whatever Triple H says. Any thoughts on Mysterio's comments on Paul Heyman and the writing crew on Raw?
Oh, that people have gotten a lot of opportunities they wouldn't have gotten otherwise?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's right. I think you definitely see it. I think with, you know, anytime... we've said a million times that if everybody who was complaining on Reddit or on whatever message board got their way, then every pay-per-view would have 15 main events with like everybody somehow magically fighting for the heavyweight title. Not everyone's going to be happy with everything. And anytime there's like people making creative decisions, like they're going to prioritize some stories over other stories. But you know, they're doing a pretty good job of spreading it around. And I don't think anybody thinks, I mean, they've done a good job of building organically, too. I mean, I don't think there's people at home that are saying, like, Humberto Carrillo, like, why is this guy on my TV? You know, or like Ricochet or AOP or like, you know, whoever. I mean, I don't think anybody's confused about, I mean, no one's, nothing's coming out of the blue. They've done a good job of sort of building everything. And hopefully they continue to do that. It is weird when it's like Rey Mysterio saying it and, you know, he's out there with AJ Styles and Randy Orton. It doesn't always seem like it, but
right.
But yeah, I mean, they are doing a lot of good with the talent that they have. Also, that Buddy Murphy, Aleister Black little feud that was going on. I mean, there are a lot of people getting that opportunity.
All right. Rob wants to know, what does the pro wrestling landscape look like in December 2020? Which is next year.
Oh, next year.
Mm-hmm.
Good question. I think it'll probably look a lot like what it looks like right now. I don't think that NXT or, I mean, I think WWE or AEW are gonna relinquish any part of the Wednesday night lineup. I frankly don't think the ratings are going to move a whole lot. And on those shows, and Raw and SmackDown are sort of like fixtures now. I mean, they're set in stone. I don't know, short of like, I don't know, man. What, like Impact or MLW becoming like a must-watch show and taking all this oxygen away? I mean, I think that there's so many shows now that it's going to be hard for smaller companies to move up. I think the biggest thing will be talent. I mean, it's how many people defect from WWE to go independent or go to AEW or what, some combination of the two. But I don't know. There's also the XFL thing. I mean, I don't know if that's not wrestling, but as far as like a thing that could actually change the way these shows run.
When is that happening? February?
Yeah, so theoretically.
We should get in there.
You want to play?
Yeah.
You probably could.
Return punts. No fair catches. Here's another question, though, from Dingus. I'd like to know Dave's thoughts on Joey Mercury's crusade against Ring of Honor.
Oh, yeah. Joey Mercury was a producer. Obviously, he was a producer for WWE for a long time and then got a job at Ring of Honor and then parted ways with them in the not-too-distant past. I guess was fired or his contract ran out and they didn't renew it. And he's just gone scorched earth on them on Twitter over the past month or so. Kind of exposing a lot of shit. Exposing, I use sort of loosely. A lot of it's been sort of proven or is backed up by source material, or by other wrestlers. But who knows? I mean, it's just one person ranting slightly incoherently on Twitter, but talking about just how much some wrestlers are getting paid, some of like the backstage rumor and innuendo. There's been some pretty damning stuff. A lot of it was about Kelly Klein, related to Kelly Klein, who was the Women of Honor champion, who worked very closely with Joey Mercury, in terms of, you know, production, producing the matches and training and stuff. Ring of Honor doesn't need anybody else's help in getting bad press right now. I just think that it could be. I'll say this, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens to Ring of Honor in the next year. They're not keeping up with the Joneses. They really missed their shot. Really missed their shot. And they still put on some good matches and have some good wrestlers, but, you know, the next year could be. The next year could be really bad for them. Mm. I mean, I guess it could be good, but Marty Scurll's about to leave.
That leads me to the next question. Marty Scurll, AEW or NXT?
Before we get there, I think Brody King's up. Rush, I think, is up. They just took the title off him, put it on PCO, who's awesome, but is also like 60 years old. Maybe not that old. But yeah, the next year could have to be some big losses for them. Now, where is he going to go? He's going to go to AEW, I think. Cody Rhodes that's all the signs are sort of pointed there. The red herring this week is that Cody Rhodes was being interviewed and he basically said, "We would love to have Luke Harper," when asked about Luke Harper. And then when asked about Marty Scurll, he's like, "Marty's going to do what Marty's going to do," which seemed like somebody who had sort of resigned himself to losing him, or at least to like, or at least showed that he was totally uncertain, which is if there is an uncertainty there, that's almost more shocking than anything else, because you would think that if AEW is going to get him, they already know. Now, the other element there, though, is that I don't even know how these rules apply, but Luke Harper had been released when he said that, and Marty Scurll is still technically under contract to Ring of Honor when he said that. Mm-hmm. And that could have a lot to do with the way he phrased those two answers. So I'm going with the most obvious choice, which is AEW. A lot of people have speculated that he'll end up there with the Bullet and the Blade. He's already like Instagramming pictures of him with Luke Harper. Brody King, who was part of his posse in Ring of Honor, is going to be a free agent. Weirdly, Luke Harper's indie name, which he's going to go back to apparently, is Brody Lee. So there'd be like two Brodies on the same team. That could be odd. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of possibilities. And I think AEW, frankly, is the best place for him.
Yeah.
If I were his, like, manager, that's where I would tell him to go.
Okay, Eric Leisure asks,
is he related to David Leisure of Empty Nest fame?
Maybe. Or Leisure Suit Larry.
That was one of the all-time great video games.
Yeah. All right. He asks, any chance we're not getting a Mae Young Classic this year because WWE doesn't want to highlight / elevate unsigned talent for AEW?
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, they could run a Mae Young Classic with just the talent they have, though.
Mm-hmm. But it's different.
They could do the talent they have and like a couple of like foreign wrestlers or something, you know, who would not be a great, you know, who just to kind of like build the cred. I don't think that would be the reason for not doing it, but maybe.
Maybe because May is spelled with A-E. And there you go.
Yeah, I think there's probably more and more functional reasons for it, but one of them is, you know, I mean, they're doing a lot of women's wrestling content. Yeah. The Mae Young Classic is cool. I think they should still do it, but like, as a stage for people to give exposure to wrestlers. Yeah, I guess you'd be giving exposure to some people who won't make it and, you know, who'll get signed by other people. And you'd actually be actively probably taking away from the exposure that some of them are getting on the proper shows, you know, to if they're in the classic. I mean, who knows? There could be a lot of reasons for it.
All right. If WWE and AEW were to battle in a 5-man Survivor Series match, who should each side send?
WWE versus AEW?
Yes.
I mean, I guess with AEW, you got to go, well, it's tough.
Cody?
You'd go Cody. You have to go Omega. Cody. You have to go, damn, you have to go Cody, Omega, Jericho,
Dean Ambrose,
Moxley. And then, man, I'm just thinking about who's like at the actual, I was going to go with the Bucks, but I think they just got swallowed up. I would go, if it were me, I would do, who am I forgetting? I'm forgetting somebody significant. Cody, Omega, Moxley, Jericho, and then I'm going to go Rey Fénix as my wild card fifth member. Representing, you know, the Lucha Bros and the tag division in general.
Mm-hmm.
And then on WWE, wow, this is even harder.
I know, they have everybody.
Just one team for all of WWE's brands. I would do...
just Roman and Triple H.
Yeah.
They can handle it.
Roman Reigns. I would do, okay, Baron Corbin, Bobby Roode, Dolph Ziggler. I'm just kidding. I think you got to go with the faces, right? I would do... I'm going to say no legends. Triple H and Undertaker are not eligible. I would go... Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins. Well, is Brock Lesnar eligible? I guess he's the champion.
Is Randy Orton?
I don't know I wouldn't put him on the team. I would go...
Daniel Bryan.
Yes. I'd go Daniel Bryan, Roman Reigns.
Kofi?
Oh, man. This is so hard. How does SmackDown have all the good wrestlers?
AJ, wrestler of the decade, AJ Styles,
yeah.
AJ Lee, whoever.
I was going to put Keith Lee on there as my wild card. I don't think they get a wild card. Maybe, God, I'd say Ciampa to represent NXT.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they only get one team, AJ, Bryan, Roman, Kofi, and either Seth or Brock Lesnar, depending on how your mileage may vary. We're taking out legends and we're taking out NXT. Just to simplify this thing. It's impossible.
Hmm. All right. Curtis Lewis wants to know, what event or storyline would you retcon that had negative long-term effects on the industry? Montreal Screwjob, steroid trial, Vincent out of the NWO.
Wait, what's the question? Which real life storyline?
I guess. Which event or storyline had negative long-term effects on the industry? He says, would you retcon, which I don't...
Yeah, like retroactively delete.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. The steroid trial was pretty ridiculous.
Imagine how big the guys would be now.
I'm not sure everybody, I'm not sure all these wrestlers are as God created them, but there's different stuff out there now. Who is it just said recently? Jim Ross gave an interview where he said wrestlers should be allowed to use steroids, which I sort of agree with.
I think everyone should.
I mean, I definitely think that steroids, you know, people just imagine like getting horse steroids shot into your ass and, you know, roid rage and all that kind of stuff. And how, and I'm not saying steroids get an unnecessary bad rap, but they kind of do.
Yeah.
I just think the doctor's care thing is so hard. You know, it's like, I don't have any problem with someone taking whatever, like a doctor, even a sort of, you know, doctor with an agenda, nutritionist, whatever, helps, you know, as long as there's someone there guiding you. But the functional result is there's still going to be a lot of dudes and ladies who are like coming up at the very lowest ranks who are still doing it the wrong way just to try to get a look, you know? And there's also the trickle-down effect. If everybody, if you know, you woke up tomorrow and everybody on the WWE roster had magically gained 30 pounds of like lean muscle mass, then anybody who hadn't gained that muscle mass would really stand out as looking slight, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Here's some fun questions right here. What's your favorite wrestling-related Christmas gift?
That I've received, or like what would be a good idea for a gift?
I would think that you received.
Like
I got the old.
See, my birthday is right around Christmas, so you have to. I'll be too. Forgiven for forgetting what I got for when. Dom got me a vintage Davey Boy Smith T-shirt. That's really awesome.
That's cool.
I
have a picture of me with the old LJN rubber wrestling figures, the Ultimate Warrior one.
Nice.
That's like $250 online. I got to find that. It's, while I'm home now, I got to go to my parents.
$250?
Yeah, $219 it says right now. I'm looking at it. But I have pictures with like that whole series. Like that was like the last ones.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
Like, why does that one have no makeup on?
I don't know. That's weird. Someone painted.
That's a really limited edition.
I think somebody painted it like that.
Or just scratched it off.
Yeah. That was a good gift. Because I got him, Big Boss Man, a couple of those guys in that series.
Oh, yeah. I only had a few of them. I certainly had more as an adult just to sort of like pick them up at yard sales and flea markets and stuff more than I ever had as a kid. Mm-hmm. I had one buddy who just had them all and really didn't care about wrestling. You know what I mean? Just like liked it enough and his parents just bought him every toy.
Yeah, my little cousin had all of those LJNs and he was younger than me. He's like 4 years younger than me and he had like every single one, like hundreds of them. I had a lot more.
Some people
I had a lot
just,
more of the like little Hasbro ones.
Just silver spoon in their mouth, you know?
Yeah. Let's see. I saw another good one. Oh, Scott Armstrong says, I popped for the Daniel Bryan going back to his old look move. Who else on the roster would you like to see going back to his throwback look?
Well, Daniel Bryan went beyond his old look. We got to say that. I mean, he has this sort of like stubble beard, which he never really had, right? I mean, maybe he did. But like when my favorite Daniel Bryan was shaved head with the kind of long beard, not long beard, but full beard.
Mm-hmm.
And then before that, he had nothing. He was kind of clean shaven, short hair.
Right.
But yes, Daniel Bryan appearing after all this time with the craziest mane. I guess he cut his hair after he left when he was temporarily retired, but he didn't shave it and he always had the beard and then he grew the hair back. And I mean, he's had it for so long. It was really shocking. That was a really cool moment. I also love this. I love this Bray Wyatt gimmick where he's changing people. Like everybody he's wrestled has either like turned heel or turned babyface, or in Daniel Bryan's case sort of been reverted into this old form. If Bray Wyatt was going to come and like turn some other people back to the way they used to look, who should they do? Like, is that who other people, like, is that the question?
Well, it's
not Bray Wyatt specifically.
No, but you can run with that. I mean, that's fun too. I'm trying to look up the roster right here because this is kind of fun. Vince just comes out with the blown out quads in the tank top.
But just aesthetically, right?
Mm-hmm.
The weird thing is that Jericho has kind of gone back to his old look himself, too. Remember he had the short hair forever, but like original Jericho is the kind of long hair that he's rocking now.
What about AJ Styles comes out as like baby face
with like
TNA.
The short hair?
Yeah.
Like the really shaven. Short hair? Oh, that's the worst, man. He looks so, it's so funny how much difference that made to, for him. I mean, how much, he looks so much better now.
Brock Lesnar is pretty much the same, right?
Yeah, Brock Lesnar looks... No, if you could take Brock
Drew
back
McIntyre?
To the bearded Brock, that would be awesome. Mm. I love bearded Brock. Yeah, man. Hold on. I don't know if there's that many more. The thing is, in wrestling, people don't change that much.
Kane, back to Isaac Yankum.
Oh my gosh, there's this incredible meme on Reddit right now about 1989 Kane. Somebody complained that 1989 Kane wasn't on the new video game, and that's kind of be like the obsession with that specific year of Kane has become sort of a
who is 89 Kane? Kane wasn't even in the
no 98 Kane. What did I say?
Oh, okay.
Dang. Elias, Google old pictures of him. That's definitely hilarious if you want to go back and look.
Really?
I mean, he just looks so different. It's amazing what a beard growing, the difference a beard growing in can make.
Paul Heyman coming out as ECW Paul Heyman.
Would be fantastic. That might be the winner. There are really not that many people who've changed dramatically.
Braun Strowman comes out as wasn't he one of the party people or whatever he was called?
Oh, yeah. I mean, for like one day. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
but still, if he came dancing, the rabbit or whatever.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm sure there's a right answer for this, but I can't think of anybody who's like, who had such a different look the way Daniel Bryan. I mean, Triple H is weirdly the answer.
Triple H
has been the answer to every question. That would be really funny. If he like just came out one time and just had really long hair and like the limmy mustache.
Yeah.
Or the clean shaven. I mean, that's
like the snob.
Yeah.
Greenwich snob or terrorizing. What about the Hardy brothers, Hardy boys coming out in that neon? But
Matt
that
Hardy
old
basically
neon.
Wears the same thing he always did.
Yeah, but like original, like when they were fighting Kane, like by themselves as jobbers.
Yeah, that would be pretty good.
Kane is Isaac Yankum.
I mean, but they still have such a commitment to wearing like JNCO jeans. It's really hard. It's hard to say they've changed a lot.
What about Bobby Roode as the security guard on Raw?
What are you looking at to get these answers?
I'm just looking at a list of all the WWE wrestlers, and I'm just trying to think of anything they used to do. Sheamus is Bono's bodyguard.
Yeah, Sheamus would have been a good one, except he just went back to his old look too.
Right.
Man. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Cesaro would be a great one. If Cesaro had got that kind of, he had really long hair back in the day. He was always losing his hair, but he rocked the long hair regardless for a while. It's pretty cool.
Steven Regal.
Lord Steven Regal? I mean, which version?
Lord Steven.
He had long hair. He had kind of long hair during his like WWE push before that ended.
I mean,
the King, Steven Regal, he was so great, man, for that brief moment before he got suspended.
Undertaker
with like the Mohawk was the best Undertaker of the past decade. And I've always been mad that he didn't just keep that for his subsequent appearances.
Hmm. All right, let's go to another question. That's a fun one, though. Next question from Adam Bonin. You're Triple H. Dwayne Johnson calls you and says, I'm bored. I'm happy to show up for the Rumble, do 3 promos before WrestleMania, and perform at WrestleMania. How do you book him?
I get 3 promos?
Mm-hmm.
So that's like a limitation within the thing.
But he's also going to work WrestleMania. So you have him win the Rumble, do 3 promos, and lose at WrestleMania?
I mean, I think conventional wisdom would say that you don't have him win the Rumble, that you have him like appear in the Rumble and get eliminated or something by the person who he's going to fight at WrestleMania or somehow started up there, because Royal Rumble winner challenging somebody is like can help a different storyline more. But Vince would probably have him win the Rumble. Or I don't know.
And then have Triple H beat him in a retirement match at WrestleMania.
Here's what I would do.
He could fight Roman Reigns.
Here's what I would do.
Blood versus blood.
I would try to Trojan horse him into AEW.
Ooh.
Just have him just say like, I'm really mad at Vince. Can I show up on Dynamite? And then like do something, do like Baba Booey it on live TV. He's the only person famous enough to be for them to be like, yeah, come on. Or call TNT directly. And the TNT, like whoever the president of TNT would like insist that he appear on the show.
I like that. But he has to yell Baba Booey also at the very end.
What is the WWE equivalent of Baba Booey? Yeah. I think I would... here's what I would do. Replay... What was the Royal Rumble that he came out and helped Roman Reigns? 16 or something?
Maybe.
Maybe it was longer ago than that. But I would I would basically try to recreate that moment exactly and then have The Rock... When he's as they're standing in the ring getting booed and it's Roman Reigns' fault, I would have The Rock snap and clothesline Roman Reigns and beat the shit out of him.
Just give him the rock bottom.
Yeah. Give him the rock bottom.
Like as they hug, then he puts the arm over him.
Yes. Perfect.
Bam.
Perfect. And then, And then Reigns versus Rock at WrestleMania. The loser has to relinquish their Samoan heritage
to Samoa Joe.
Yeah.
All right. Part two of this question might have answered our other question. Has any wrestler had as good a decade as Okada's 2010s?
Right. So obviously we gave short shrift to the Japanese wrestlers who stayed in New Japan.
I don't know anything about that.
Okada climbed the ranks and just like became the face of, you know, arguably the biggest company, second biggest company in the world. He's going to be one of the torchbearers at the Olympics for Japan in the next Summer Olympics, which is insane, even though, you know, culture's a little bit different. Wrestling's place in culture is a little bit different. I mean, you could definitely make the case.
Someone asked, am I going to regret spending $500 on a Royal Rumble ticket?
Only because you could probably get a decent seat for less.
Okay.
But if you can afford $500, then like, no, you're not going to regret it. Go to the Rumble, have a good time.
Who's your favorite and dark horse candidates to win the men's and women's Rumble this year?
I like how, when you ask who the dark, like who your dark horse candidate is, that's just such a loaded question because it's like, who can you not think of right now? Who are all the wrestlers that don't immediately spring to mind?
I feel like it's a long shot, no?
No, I know. I'm just saying, like
Keith Lee.
I mean, Keith Lee is my choice.
Yeah.
My choice. I think that, you know, if we're talking about people who haven't held a title, who haven't actually main evented a pay-per-view or something like that, Sheamus has held lots of titles. Sheamus has won a Royal Rumble. I don't know if he's considered a long shot, but he would be an interesting one that no one, I think, would probably guess. I would say long shot. I mean, is Andrade a long shot? He could be the champ. He could be the champ at any moment in time.
Right.
I got a long shot for you.
Do it.
Long shot in terms of like, yeah, that nobody would guess it. Bray Wyatt, not The Fiend. The Fiend defends his title on the show, and Bray Wyatt. Regular Bray Wyatt from the one that wrestled The Miz on Sunday wins the Royal Rumble.
How about this?
The two faces of Wyatt both compete at WrestleMania.
Yeah, with Bo Dallas as The Fiend. Does that work?
No.
Andrew Kartak wants to know, what's your favorite underrated storyline in history?
I like these open-ended questions. You gotta start,
Benny answers it, and why is it Millionaires Club versus New Blood? I'm like,
oh my God. Millionaires Club versus New Blood is insane. I just didn't like anybody in the New Blood. That's my recollection. I thought it was a great idea. It's always a good idea for an angle. It's worked before.
You just didn't like the members.
Hold on 1 second. Let me look this up.
I'm looking them up too.
Like when they did it in TNA, it was almost
Impact.
Better. It's a Million Dollar Mafia Impact. Yeah, whatever. Wait, who was the New Blood? I gotta look this up. Here we go. All right. I'm reading the Wikipedia page.
So am I.
I just can't. If you read Wikipedia pages from this era of WCW, it's like there is not enough, like it's impossible for it to make sense because the booking was so slapdash that like you cannot abbreviate the nonsense that happened.
I love it.
Look at this. On screen, Bischoff and Russo took over and declared all WCW titles vacant on April 10th, 2000. They also declared a new stable with both of them at the helm called the New Blood. It consisted of most of the younger wrestlers in WCW, as well as longtime talent that had been largely in the background for years, feuding with the Millionaires Club, the older stars of WCW, who they claimed held them all back. Now, why are Bischoff and Russo with the New Blood? Both these guys have been around the business forever. Maybe if it was Bischoff was with the Millionaires Club and Russo was with the New Blood, then at least like you have, you know, dueling like heads of state.
But that's what you would expect, bro.
But why? But right. I mean, it shouldn't be. The story shouldn't be about either of them.
Wait till you scroll down on this Wikipedia to see members. Wonderful.
The idea was to get younger talent over and generate more interest among the younger fans that watched the WWF instead of WCW. Although it later evolved into a New World Order rehash. This is the text of Wikipedia.
Yeah.
And New World Order rehash. While Hulk Hogan feuded with the New Blood, he would occasionally wear a black denim vest with the initials FUNB on the back in white. The initials FUNB stood for Fuck You, New Blood. This is in Wikipedia, guys. During a televised promo, Hogan said the NB stands for New Blood, and you can guess what the FU means, brother. I'm glad that they had the preceding sentence in which they spelled it out. I'm not sure this passes the Wikipedia test for truth, because like, we don't know what it stood for. He said you could figure it out, but you could figure out some other stuff. Anyway, back to the text. On April 16th, at Spring Stampede in Chicago, Illinois, all the titles were filled with matches between the New Blood and Millionaires Club. The New Blood won all of the vacant WCW titles with the exception of the WCW Hardcore Championship, which was won by Terry Funk. I mean...
That sucks.
If I told you Terry Funk was there, does that make me a bad wrestling fan? The feuds continued for another month or so before the New Blood disbanded due to WCW making a hasty decision that it was not working. As the Millionaires Club got most of the positive fan reaction. You think that the stable with all of the famous wrestlers in it is going to get a better reaction than the one with like Chuck Palumbo and Billy Kidman? I don't even know they're in it. I'm totally guessing now.
You'll find out.
The true end of the angle occurred July 9th at Bash at the Beach in Daytona Beach, Florida, after the infamous Russo shoot promo, which caused Hogan and Bischoff to leave the promotion. However, the New Blood theme continued in WCW, coinciding with a New Blood Rising pay-per-view in August 2000. I don't know. Okay. The New Blood was composed of three different stables within itself. The Filthy Animals, right. The National Born Thrillers, right. And the other New Blood. I mean, wild. The New Blood members were the ones who mostly feuded with the Millionaires Club, while the other two were more of supporting casts. The Natural Born Thrillers were all rookies, with the exception of Sean Stasiak, while the rest of the New Blood had already had TV time. Okay, let's start with...
Look at this roster.
Let's start with the Natural Born Thrillers. I'm a big Mark Jindrak mark. None of the rest of this team deserve to be on... Well, okay, Chuck Palumbo ended up being a good hand. But Johnny the Bull, Reno...
Sean O'Hare was the best out of the Natural Born Thrillers. What are you
Sean O'Hare, rest in peace, was never good. I don't understand why people like him so much. He had an interesting look. Mark Jindrak was the good one of that crew. This is my personal opinion. I'm not trying to be a wrestling quote-unquote historian here. Sean Stasiak had already washed out of WCW. All these guys were literally too muscular, with the Palumbo and to a lesser extent Jindrak had like slightly believable if extremely superheroish builds, but the other guys were so lean that they just looked, it just looked like, it's like what a, if you if someone who wasn't a wrestling fan imagined what like the WCW Power Plant roster looked like this was it. And it really was true.
It really was that.
Mike Sanders was in this group. At the time, I did not understand who Mike Sanders was as a diehard wrestling fan who was not a little kid. I was like in college when this was happening or post-college. I didn't understand who Mike Sanders was. Really didn't understand who like Reno was. I mean, this was a terrible, terrible faction.
Mike Sanders is now a stand-up comedian.
Really?
That's what it says on his Wikipedia.
Where does he live? Should we get him on the show? My favorite sure. wrestler, Mike Sanders? I'm changing my stripes as we speak. The Filthy Animals was okay, but it just seemed like it gave off that vibe of WCW slapdash booking because they just sort of made these guys into a faction and kind of changed their personalities at the same time. I liked the name. I liked some of the guys. I was never a big Kidman fan, although he was a hell of a worker. And of course, like Eddie Guerrero and a lot of respect for Conan. But yeah, I mean, I don't mind Filthy Animals versus the Revolution. Like, that's fine. Fine. Keep that going forever. All right. Now we just need the new blood, which was, David Arquette. I don't understand. Yeah, let's see the first one. Mike Awesome.
I love
Buff
Mike
Bagwell,
Awesome.
Bam Bam Bigelow, Booker T, Crowbar. Crowbar is another one of those guys where I just like, was confused as to who he was.
Crowbar again?
Disco Inferno, Shane Douglas. Wasn't he the Revolution? No, yeah, I don't know. David Flair, Goldberg, apparently. Is this right? Hoovy Guerrero, Bret Hart, Horace Hogan, Ernest Miller. I'm skipping over the people who were in the other groups. Lance Storm, Vampiro, The Wall. I mean, none of these guys, I mean, some of these guys are great, but I just don't know.
What a disaster. Look at all the managers for the New Blood.
75 managers, more managers than wrestlers. How on earth do you put those, do you make the opposing faction Flair, Hogan, Nash, DDP, Sting, and then Sid Vicious, Kurt Hennig, Lex Luger.
I cannot believe WCW folded.
And expect someone else to get cheered. I don't know.
These rosters are so good.
I mean, the WCW invasion is the obvious one. To go back to the original question of like, you know, was the question about gimmicks? Storylines?
Yeah, I just like you reading Wikipedia pages for the worst
question.
Angles
forget
of
the
all
question.
Time.
We got to get out of here. What's the ask me another question or two, and let's like go back to our day jobs.
Someone asked, no question, just talk about Orange Cassidy for an hour.
Sorry, we don't have an hour. I love Orange Cassidy. Great appearance this week on Dark. I think it was a Dark, right? He is a singularly great, really impressive wrestler. And the cool thing about him is that, who was it? Some celebrity. Oh, what's his name? That comedian guy who was on Whitney. Chris
D'Elia?
Yeah.
Okay.
He tweeted about him. He was like, I've never heard of this dude. I just saw him for the first time. I'm obsessed.
Really?
The cool thing about Orange Cassidy is he gets that sort of response.
Did you see Orange Cassidy ice skating?
No.
Didn't have his hands in his pockets. I was kind of pissed.
Yeah, Orange Cassidy is incredible.
Here's
the thing. For wrestling fans, we love that like the Bucks are self-referential and they're sort of meta, right? We love that they have a move called the Meltzer Driver. We like when wrestlers do work shoots. We like all the stuff that breaks the fourth wall. It's really hard to convey that to lapsed fans or casual fans because it all just kind of looks like pro wrestling. Orange Cassidy's brilliance is that he can convey to a very casual fan that wrestling is self-aware. And that's way more important than I think even people like me would have given it credit not too long ago.
All right, here's the most ringer question of all time. What's better, the 2003 NBA draft class or the 2002 OVW class?
2002 OVW class was that Cena, Orton, Batista.
Mm-hmm. And 2003 is LeBron, Darko, Dwayne Wade, Carmelo.
Man, that's tough. Chris Bosh. I'd say they're neck and neck.
Brock.
Was Brock in that class too?
It looks like it. Rico Constantino, Shelton Benjamin. I think they got more titles. John Cena alone won more titles than the whole 2003 NBA class.
Yeah, I don't think anybody, nobody in that,
for Andy Orton.
LeBron James doesn't have 16 championships. Exactly. 15 or whatever it is. Yeah.
God, Batista looks nuts coming out of there.
Oh, when he was that young?
Yeah, he's like Pitbull number 7. He's got the chain around his neck.
Oh, yeah. He was the Leviathan back then. He had like contact, like crazy contacts in. And yeah, he had a whole gimmick and everything. Cena was like a wrestling robot, the prototype.
Right.
Randy Orton had like a shaggy mop of hair.
Mm-hmm.
And did this really cool crossbody frog splash, which I really loved back in the day.
Crossbody frog splash, that's funny. From the top or just like...
Yeah, I think...
Or running off the ropes.
No, like from the top rope, he would just do like a frog splash. I think that was right.
That's interesting.
Never heard yeah. And Brock was just Brock from the start. I mean, he's not as... Now he's got old man strength, which makes him even scarier. But I don't know. I can't pick one. Those are both really great. They're neck and neck.
All right. What else do we got? Any more? Would you consider moving your show to Thursday or Friday? I like hearing your takes on AEW, and it's weird that you're about a week behind. Love you guys.
I know. The idea was that we'd be kind of setting up the week. We did it, but and later in the week, it just gets... I mean, at some point, we're missing SmackDown altogether. I mean,
and you're further away from the pay-per-views.
Yeah, and so that was basically it. It was just like, are we going to be reactive to the pay-per-views? I don't know. It's tough. It's tough. We got to be flexible here.
Yeah. Just cancel the show.
We should just do, maybe we deliberately do a couple of post-AEW shows. Just do a couple of Thursday apps. Like once a month, we'll do a Thursday app just to put some focus on that, because it's true. We do need to be concentrating on it more.
I know. Like, you like to have some type of consistency. But at the same time,
consistency
weird the way it's
versus comprehensiveness.
Exactly. Well, also, what's good about like the mailbags and stuff, though, these people can keep those questions coming. And that gets us back to whatever happened on AEW or anything else like that.
Totally true.
I would say, to wrap things up, keep the questions coming. You can even tweet them wherever.
Yeah, tweet them at us.
Yeah. And then whatever email day we get directly. To them, we can still get them. You can call David Shoemaker. I'll give his phone number right here.
Please do.
Yeah. 917. Are you a 917?
No.
All right.
That's your first hint.
Do you want to say goodbye to any of these
people? Is that it? That's our last question?
Yeah, I think we should end it on that because I don't see any.
Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for all the questions. Jim, thank you for coming to New York just for this show.
I know. I got to get right back on a flight. I just came from the airport reading these streets.
Quick
and
turnaround.
Now I'm going back.
We'll see you back here. Oh, sorry. Apologies before I forget, as always, to Dean Ambrose, a.k.a. John Moxley. We'll see you back here next week, humanoids.
Most likely. Next week is Christmas. So.
Oh, that's right. We'll see you back here next time, humanoids.
Yeah, maybe. Because the following week is New Year's.
I said next time.
We'll see you in hell, humanoids. Yeah, next time. Well, we're going to try and do something next week, guys. We'll see. Next Thursday or Friday.
He just really wants the last line of the show. I'll give it to him.
See you now.
We are desperately out of time. The tape machines are rolling. We'll see you next week on the Masked Man Show.